prepare yourself for a physical therapy conference that will deliver a PT education hangover of epic proportions. Because we're going to Las Vegas! This October, PT Pintcast presents the Tri-State Physical Therapy Conference, October 11th to the 13th in fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada.
Vegas, baby, Vegas!
3 days of learning, networking, and, well, probably some good old-fashioned Las Vegas-style fun. With presentations by APTA President Sharon Dunn, State Chapter Presidents Chris Powers of California, John Hike of Arizona, and RJ Williams from Nevada. With your keynote presentation by Tim Flynn, focus talks on telehealth, medical marijuana, and motivational interviewing. Okay, just so we're clear, that's three different talks. We're not mixing medical marijuana with telehealth and motivational interviewing. Well, not yet, anyway. Tickets are on sale now. Get yours at ptpintcast.com. The Tri-State Physical Therapy Conference, October 11th to the 13th. What happens in Vegas? Well, you know how this ends.
My favorite things to challenge at the moment would be our ideas around pain and our ideas around the biopsychosocial framework. You know, if we look at science and medical science and being a clinician, it's about continually crossing chasms and continually questioning the models and the ideas that we have, because in 5 or 10 years' time, the sea will have shifted again. It is uncomfortable being wrong, and it is cognitive dissonance. And no, it's not nice, and you don't always enjoy it, but hopefully the end result is a better one.
Got a chance to talk with Ben Cormack. He's a physio from London. Ran into Ben on Twitter. He had a really, really interesting look on about pain and perception and a visual analog scale, and it really got a good discussion going, so I wanted to bring him in and kind of get some further thoughts on that. Ben owns and runs Core Kinetic. He's a musculoskeletal therapist with a clinical background in sports from the UK, so excited to bring Ben on the show in this month when we're talking about focusing on pain. So buckle up for this one. Episode, as always, brought to you by Owens Recovery Science. Johnny Owens and his team leading the charge in blood flow restriction rehabilitation training. If you're looking to get certified and add that to your clinical treatment plan, do it with those guys. They have the education to get certified, plus the equipment you need to apply it in clinic. Find them online at owensrecoveryscience.com.
Broadcasting to physical therapists around the world. Heard in over 135 countries with more than 1 million downloads and counting.
This is
the PT Pintcast. The best conversations happen at happy hour. Welcome to ours.
May I introduce...
Please allow me to introduce you to...
Here's your host, physical therapist, Jimmy McKay.
Welcome to PT Pintcast. The next episode starts right now. Tripped across a great idea on Twitter where we find a lot of good ideas amongst a sea of bad ideas, I do want to point out. but this one was worth investigating. So we bring on the show Ben Cormack. Ben, welcome to the program, man.
Thanks for having me, Jimmy, all the way from, all the way over here in the UK.
Yeah, for a second there, man, when I heard the accent, I was going to say Texas, maybe Louisiana, something like that. I've said it before on this show, and I'll say it again. You guys just have an advantage over there, especially here in the States, is that as soon as you guys start talking with the accent, you get like 10 or 15 IQ points added on. You just sound smarter. I don't know what it is.
Well, to be fair, Jimmy, I need them. So I'm very happy with that little boost in my intellect.
Well,
it's all smoke and mirrors.
Well played. Ben, you own and run a Core Kinetic. What is that? Well, tell the audience what Core Kinetic is.
So Core Kinetic really are just an educational company that I set up back in 2011, 2012. And so predominantly, as well as being a clinician, one of the main things that I do for work is travel around, do some teaching. And I do that under the kind of umbrella of Core Kinetic. And it's just really an educational vehicle trying to bring hopefully some good quality evidence-based information to people.
Website, you want to throw that out there so make sure people can get it?
Absolutely. CORKINETIC.com, Core Kinetic. And I'm always scared that I'm going to misspell it when I say that. There's always this part of me that...
looks like you're going to be here in the States for our listeners. I mean, we have listeners from around the world, but you're going to be in the States in Chicago with Entropy Physical Therapy. Is that October?
Yeah, so I was there last year as well, back this year, 26th or 27th of October. I enjoy Chicago. What a great city.
Yeah, it's a good town, man. I think it's a good representation of a big city in the States.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to coming back. And I mean, I love New York. I taught in New York last year. And it's all, I just, what gets me is always just the size, the scale of everything, you know.
It looms over.
It looms.
Yeah. Only thing I have a problem with Chicago is they say they have pizza, but what they have is just large lasagna. They have round lasagna. That's not pizza, man.
I'm not getting involved in internal US politics,
smart.
Jimmy.
That's smart.
Yeah, it looks like it could be a problem at the moment, so I'm just going to back away.
Excellent. All right, so the tweet I wanted to get into happened a couple of weeks ago, and I like things that make me say, huh, because I thought one way. I was kind of with maybe the majority of people in thinking, and then reading your tweet, and it was really a thread, made me say, huh, what about that? Which I think is a great use of Twitter or other social media platforms when it can make you say, huh, maybe the way I was thinking wasn't the way, it's just a way. And I'll read a little bit of an excerpt from Ben. You can find him on Twitter at CORKINETIC. That's Core Kinetic on Twitter. And it started like this. Maybe it's worth considering that when someone tells you they have 10 out of 10 pain, it's not the intensity of their pain they're telling you about. It could be that it is the impact of pain on their function / existence. Perhaps we don't always give people the opportunity to let us know this other than some form of numerical rating. And the thread continues, but really that was the start of it. And you went on to say maybe the 10 out of 10 pain is them trying to explain all the different things that the pain is limiting them from doing. I just love that thought start. And talk a little bit about that, why you came up with that and why you decided to share it.
Well, all these, you know, like all the best things that we pick up in life, actually, I don't think it was completely my idea. It was something that we were discussing on one of my courses last year sometime with people much, much smarter than myself. And that's why I enjoy teaching. It often gives you an opportunity to learn. And really, I think the point is that, you know, as we all learn when we did subjective assessments, we talk to people about pain and we ask people about pain. And we kind of very much stick to pain itself, the kind of how much does it hurt? Where does it hurt? When does it hurt? What does it feel like? Is it like electricity? Is it like a tsunami? You know, all these kind of characterizations that we try and give it. But we give people very little else of a way to communicate with us about some of the more distressing elements of pain, maybe what pain is limiting from doing them, just maybe how much pain is actually affecting their lives. And I think that we have to think about any clinical encounter as being on multiple levels, you know, and that someone has an opportunity to tell you about their pain. And maybe we ask them in a very unidimensional way. And sometimes it can be that I think that people are trying to get something else across to us, but it's not always apparent in a simple format kind of what that is. And I think what actually sparked it, now I think back, was the discussion of, you know, clinicians saying, well, that person can't be in 10 out of 10 pain, you know, they walked in here, you know, they don't know what 10 out of 10 pain is, you know. And actually I think sometimes, you know, but if I'm being honest, sometimes we need to get over ourselves and actually maybe reconsider exactly what our question may mean to people and maybe some of the alternative answers that we might get back.
Yeah, try to listen to what they're actually trying to get across to you. Later on in the thread, you set it up pretty nicely. You said, imagine if you had a long waiting time to be seen by a doctor. Perhaps you might increase that rating a touch to be seen quicker, or perhaps to be taken more seriously, kind of what you just alluded to there.
Yeah, and I think what I'd like to get across is I wouldn't like that to be misinterpreted as suggesting that people make things up. Because I, you know, pain is one of these amazing things that only the person experiencing it can experience. You know, I can't tell someone they haven't got an amount of pain or it doesn't feel like what it feels like because I'm not feeling it. It's a unique subjective thing. But at the same time, you know, these things are open to not. So the best way to describe it, I think, is that, you know, we're not always getting exactly what we expect to be getting from that question. And then it's maybe that, as you know, that that you see, what I'm really struggling with here is trying not to come across as suggesting that we're manipulating the scenario.
Right.
But certainly if I really, really wanted someone to take notice of me, you know, if I really wanted you to hear me, if I really wanted to get across to you that I'm in need of help and I'm distressed and I want you to really, really focus on me right now, by telling you I've got 10 out of 10 pain, you are likely to do that.
How was it received? What were the responses that you got from this thread?
I would say generally it was pretty positive. In terms, I think a lot of people responded in a similar way to you did, Jimmy, that they said, huh, I hadn't really thought about it exactly in that sense before. And this gives me a different perspective. You know, it was one of those scenarios where I don't know if it was all about yes or no agreement. I think a lot of people are a bit like, well, this is a different perspective. And sometimes that's really, really valuable. And I was quite happy with the way that people were able to say, you know, it's not about I have to agree or I have to disagree. It's actually about, you know, that this is a different perspective that I can assimilate into my kind of mindset and my thought process. Now, I do also think there's also an element always when we discuss pain and we discuss some of the other things that go with pain, such as distress, such as disability, such as suffering, that people always turn around and say, you know, if we say 1 in 10, we'll always turn around and say, well, my patients come in to see me about pain, the other things don't matter. And surely, you know, for sure, people come in and they want to talk about their pain, but it's not an either-or situation. You know, these things coexist. Pain coexists with suffering and disability, and it's very much a complex web rather than these things that are mutually exclusive or opposite polarities, you know?
Yeah. Pain education, you get a chance to travel the world and educate on some of that. What are some of the highlights? What are some of the, if your course were a book, what would be some of the chapter titles or the things that you get to get into?
Well, probably too many aeroplanes and too many airports would be chapter number one, if I'm being honest, and being delayed on the tarmac for 4 hours and other various sub chapters. But no, I mean, look, it's one of the best things that I take from it is actually getting to see different healthcare systems and different, you know, osteos, chiros, physios, whatever, in different countries and the way that they work and the way they operate and the way that they think. And for me, it's always eye-opening to be able to kind of meet people where they're at in different environments and kind of get my message across to those guys. But one of the things that I've always, you know, not struggled with per se, but one of the things that I've always found a challenge, certainly from working internationally, is kind of adjusting your message and adjusting your philosophy into different healthcare systems, into different cultures and into different perspectives. So it's kind of a constant adjusting process of trying to assimilate your message with all of the other factors that go with it. And I suppose it's a little bit like working with patients from different countries and from different nationalities and with different languages and with different cultures. And it kind of always makes me think that those people who work in very multicultural environments are such superstars, you know, people who are able to traverse these different aspects and elements. I'm still very much learning at that game.
Yeah, you're literally going around the world to talk to people in different cultures, but also subcultures. You mentioned the different healthcare professionals that you get to educate to. You got physios, but then also chiropractors, osteos. What do you think, what do you see as some of the similarities and differences as those different professions approach the care of pain? What are some things that you've come across since you're listening as much as you're teaching?
Well, certainly I think different professions are at different stages in terms of their assimilation of the information around pain. You know, certainly if we look at the kind of dominant healthcare profession, which we see it today as physio, it certainly depends on where you are in the world and the healthcare system to how people are assimilating modern information about pain. Certainly, I think in the UK, and I don't want to blow our trumpet too much, I think there seems to be a really pretty good grasp of what's going on in terms of kind of modern pain and modern pain science. I think the US certainly, which I travel to and teach in a lot, there's what I've always noticed about the US is just how much variation and variety of everything you guys have got. You know, that's fascinating to me that, you know, there's there's just so much of everything in terms of kind of where people are at in terms of education and where people are at in terms of all these different aspects. So I think definitely when it comes to kind of where we are with modern pain, though, the more we come away from manually driven professions, and I still think it's fair to say chiropraction, osteopathy are fairly manually driven. I think the more there is an embracing of more modern pain aspects and more active care and more educational concepts and things like that. And maybe there's a little bit more of a desire to progress along and challenge some of the ideas. Not to say it doesn't happen within other professions as well. I certainly think kind of when we look at, you know, certainly physio, you see that it seems to be just a little bit more challenging from within maybe than some of the other professions. But, you know, you can send hate mail to www.
Yeah, I noticed that. I mean, you know, graduating from PT school here in the States in 2016, you know, and just even wading through the social media information, trying to be proactive and finding information, that there is so much variety. And that's hard, especially when you're a new clinician or even before you graduate, is how to wade through it and weigh it and weigh the validity of these things. You know, my kung fu is better than your kung fu. No, don't pay attention to anything this person says. So you kind of get confused. And some people jump right in and they want to get to the bottom of it and they realize there is no bottom. And then some people are completely turned off by it and run away from it kicking and screaming.
Yeah, this is the problem. You know, when I first went to university, it was 1997. There wasn't social media.
Right.
There wasn't really the internet. We had this brick building called the library, and the library contained these magical things called books and journals. And so really what I'm trying to get across is that many, many years ago, it was very much about trying to find information, you know, that actually the problem was getting hold of it. It was access. And now the problem is actually not so much disseminating. It's more wading through what is being disseminated.
Yeah.
So if you imagine, you know, I get alerts that are sent to me from PubMed and from various other, you know, websites, all above board, I'd like to point out. You know, you get all this information, but it's understanding what's relevant to me and to my practice.
Right.
You know, when I read it, is it good quality? You know, can I relate it to my practice? Are the stats good? Is this good? Is that good? Is it the other? You know, and so it's not, the problem isn't so much getting hold of the information now. It's actually trying to work out whether it can relate to you and whether it's actually of a reasonable quality to use. One of the things I really like about social media, though, is actually it's like a massive peer review, because if I post up something and, you know, it's not quite right, and I get things wrong all the time, you know, I'm not a very smart cookie, but you'll get someone who'll pop up and say, have you read the stats on this XXX? You know, this is, oh my God, the confidence intervals, look at those standard deviations. And actually, you know, you'll go back. And so in one way, social media provides you with this huge a bottomless sea, this gulf of, you know, information. But then on the other end, it does provide some quite nice kind of peer review strategies. And, you know, if anyone gets, you know, too far going down a rabbit hole, you know, they tend to get dragged back by some of the smart folks. So in a way, it's a little bit self-regulating.
Yeah. Yeah, trick from radio, I'll tell you, it was very similar. You know, before there was social media, my background as a radio broadcaster, if you want to get the phones lighting up, if you want to get people paying attention to interacting with you, say something a little bit inflammatory, either to one side or the other. Next thing you know is you've got a bunch of people telling you what you just did was wrong. And that's a good way to start a conversation, but it is a good way to filter out those things that are too far one way or too far the other.
Oh, and I do that with social media all the time. So sometimes I'll sit down and I'll, you know, something will pop into my head and I haven't got a great filter, so I'll kind of tweet it out there. And, you know, and sometimes it'll go great. And then other times it will be like, do you know what? I hadn't actually thought about that. And some, you know, that kind of self-regulating kind of aspect will happen. And I actually think that's really valuable. I don't think we should be scared to get things wrong.
Right.
And I don't think we should be scared to test out ideas, you know, certainly not in an academic sense. You know, it may be weird and wacky clinical ideas aren't great, you know, like some of those YouTube videos that you see. But more that, you know, if you have ideas and you have thoughts and they are based, you know, reasonably around the evidence base that we have today, you know, it's okay sometimes to get a little bit of air on them. And you know, people will come back and they'll say, well, you know, that maybe I don't agree with this, but I agree with that. Have you thought about it like this? And I find that really valuable. Yeah. You've just got to be prepared to accept that process.
Yeah, that's the first step, is being okay with being wrong, or being able to admit it at least, and saying, okay, maybe this is a different way to think. That's hard sometimes, though, especially when you're on a big stage. If you've got a big following, you know, eating a little bit of that humble pie is hard when you're thinking there's so many people watching. But you need to do it.
Yeah, I think it depends on how you set yourself up.
Yeah.
So I like to think that, you know, that people are aware that sometimes I throw out some just ideas and some thoughts. And I don't think anyone would suggest that I'm the smartest guy on the block. And, you know, that fits me and what I do kind of perfectly. That's, you know, at the end of the day, if you set yourself up that you're right all the time, then you're going to be wrong one of the days. If you set yourself up to be inquisitive and, you know, maybe a little bit fallible and actually getting shit wrong occasionally, then, you know, then that's kind of hopefully fits with the persona.
Right. It's more real. I taught people all the time when they were starting out as broadcasters, and I'd coach them. I'd say, listen, if you're trying to be someone you're not, the audience might not know exactly what's disingenuous about this, but they'll know something isn't jiving quite right and they'll reject it. They'll just know something's weird. I don't like it.
Yeah, you know, people do have a way of sussing out, don't they? Yeah. You know, who you are and your personality and what you get across. And, you know, I think that more and more, I think social media connects us. And one of the things that I think is cool about that is that, you know, hopefully we do project the same image as we are in real life. You know, I think that's, I don't see why you have to have an alternative persona, you know, just go with who you are, do what you do. If you mess it up, you mess it up.
Yeah. Going to take a quick break. When we come back, I do want to talk about critical thinking and social media and how I thought and looked at it as hazardous.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back to the PT Pinecast.
Want to thank Brooks IHL. That's Brooks Rehabilitation Institute of Higher Learning, offering residencies, fellowship education, orthopedics, women's health, geriatrics, neurologic PT, pediatrics, sports. That's an overview of their residencies. Check out what they have to offer at brooksihl.org. World-class educational opportunities to the local and regional community. Check them out, brooksihl.org.
Support the show by telling a friend or by leaving a review on iTunes or Google Play. This is the PT Pinecast.
We got to ask you three questions, Benny. You ready for three questions?
It depends what they are, but let's go for it.
On the hot seat with three questions on the PT Pinecast.
It's brought to you by our sponsors, Aureus Medical Staffing. Quite simply, Ben, they're an organization that finds PTs and PTAs jobs here in the States. The leaders in travel PT. Do you guys have travel PT in the UK? Is that a thing?
In what sense?
So essentially, you get to, you know, you're licensed physical therapist in the States, and you want to go, you live in New York, but you want to go do a job in Chicago for like 13 weeks, kind of like a work vacation. They'll find you a position, find you a place to live, get your license exported, because we have different licenses per state for some stupid reason, but get your license from New York to Chicago and Illinois, and then find you the position. Then if you're done with Chicago after 13 weeks and you want to go work by the beach in Florida, they'll find you a position there too. Do you guys have that?
Well, I think the difference is that, you know, we don't have different, we have different counties,
right,
but we don't have states with their own legislature and that kind of thing. You guys are much more, you know, that you're a state is almost like a mini country, isn't it, in ways?
It is.
You know, and so probably about the size of the UK, to be fair. Right. Well, you know, Texas is probably a few UKs, right?
Essentially, the benefit of finding an organization like Aureus is they're going to do the hard part of finding that position for you. They set it up. You show up and do the thing that you want to do, which is be a great physio.
Well, look, that sounds like it takes a lot of trouble out of it, especially if you want to go, because I'd want to go and work in Florida, no doubt, or California, of course.
That's the first question, is where would you want to go in the 50 U.S. states if you had 13 weeks to do it? Would it be Florida or California? Well, the cool thing is you could do both, because you could go one and the other.
Yeah, look, I mean, I've been to, for a Brit, I've probably been to a few states. I've been fortunate enough to work a lot in the States. But you can't knock California. You know, I'm going to be honest. You know, if I was to live anywhere in the States or work anywhere in the States, you know, that would probably be where I'd want to go.
That's nice. Second question is a who question. Who is someone the audience should know more about? Who's someone who maybe is doing some great things, but isn't so loud on social media, but still has some really good stuff to add?
Yeah, see, there's a few. I think one of my good friends, Tim Beams, he does a lot of work with the NOI guys from Australia, with Lorimer Moseley and David Butler and those kind of guys. And Tim's a really smart cookie, does a lot of work teaching and stuff like that. But maybe isn't as much as a loud mouth as me and some of the other Brits that are out there, you know. So other people like Neil O'Connell, really smart, really great on the kind of statistical side of things. And yeah, just people who are probably, maybe they have more self-respect than these degenerate social media types.
And podcasters too. These guys don't talk about anything. Who the hell needs them?
All I've got is my loud mouth. It covers up all my other insecurities and deficiencies.
Last question on three question is a what question. What's something that you either read, downloaded and listened to, watched, something that really inspired you? You know, something that the audience can add to their reading list or watch list to find some inspiration, either inside of the profession or outside. Doesn't matter.
Oh, these are such tough questions.
Yeah, we have hardballs here, man.
You have thrown. Ask me anything about therapy and I'll answer it. You're throwing curveballs here. So I actually read a book recently. I read some Dan Pink books recently.
Which one? I'm reading one right now.
Oh, so it was... Oh, God, now you've put me under the pressure. It was...
To Sell as Human?
Yes,
Drive?
It was... No, it was Drive.
Drive's great.
It was Drive. And, you know, it just made me look at things in... You know, because some of those type of books... You know, you're kind of Malcolm Gladwell-y type of stuff. You know, sometimes they can be a bit hit and miss, can't they?
Yeah.
You know, some of the information in them, you can question. It's a little bit journalistic sometimes compared to research stuff. But I really like Dan Pink, and I just think that sometimes getting away from too much hard information and having things a little bit more digestible is really valuable, actually. You can read it in the bath.
Do you guys do that a lot over there? You read a lot in the bath?
I love reading in the bath. It's my favourite place. Because you haven't got any kids. There's no... I tend not to bathe with my kids.
Smart.
And my wife.
Smart.
Yeah. And I just find that it just is like some getting away time, you know?
Yeah, Pink is... that book, Drive, is I think you chose a good word. Digestible. There's enough interesting stuff in there, but it's not so dense that you've got to read it every couple of chapters twice. But good book.
Yeah, I think that's the point. Sometimes... It's like, you know, when we think about patient education, how much of it, you know, can sometimes be quite heavy. And actually, sometimes we need to step away and just have stuff that's just easy on the brain.
Yeah. All right, you're off the hot seat. That's three questions brought to you by our sponsors, Aureus Medical Staffing. If you'd like to do that thing that's travel physical therapy, you can do it. Essentially, do what you want, where you want to do it. Be a great PT or physio, where you want to do it. Positions in all 50 states. A friend of mine just got a position in Alaska, so she's going to go do that for about 13 weeks. So check them online at Aureus Medical Staffing. That's AureusMedical.com, AureusMedical.com. Critical thinking and social media. A guy by the name of Jared Hall and I got a chance to do an Oxford debate at our APTA's next conference a few weeks back. And the topic was actually about social media. The question, the prompt was, is social media hazardous to the profession of physical therapy? And Jared and I were actually placed on the pro side, meaning that we had to argue saying that we thought it was hazardous to the physical therapy profession. And I don't want to brag or anything, but we wound up winning that Oxford debate. But really, I think the question that prompt was not, is social media good or bad? That was not the question that was being asked. Is it hazardous? All we had to do is show an example or 10 of how it could be hazardous or how it was hazardous. And then the audience, of course, sided with us because we were right and virtuous and we walked away winning. But you and Jared have a connection as well. You guys talk a little bit on a podcast too. Talk about that.
Yeah, so we do something along with another guy, Mark Cargilla. Cargilla, I always get his name wrong. It's fine. We just roll with it now. And we do a thing called the Clinical Thinker podcast. And I was out in Texas with Jared earlier in the year. So big shout to Jared. And it's just our little way of just talking crap on air, and no one can stop us from doing it.
Yeah.
That's the amazing thing about podcasting. There's no like podcast police.
Nope. No FCC.
You can just say what you want.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So what do you guys get into with critical thinking? Talk about why you called it that, because, you know, anybody can have a podcast, but the people that start one and get past, I think the average podcast lasts like 7 episodes, or the ones that stop only get to episode 7. So if you get past 10, 15, 20, you've really got something you're obviously inspired by. So what do you guys get into? How does it work? Tell the audience kind of how it feels and why they should take a listen.
Yeah, so one of the biggest challenges, and I can imagine why people don't get past episode 7. We're at episode 9, boom. So we are above average, which I think is really, really important. But yeah, so there's 3 of us, and the challenge is always actually, we're in 3 different time zones. Mark's in Arizona, and then Jared's in Texas. I'm in the UK. So actually, it's a horror show trying to get us all engaged. But what we really want to do is just check out and talk about topics that we think are relevant to your average clinician. So we've talked about manual therapy, we've talked about pain, we've talked about pain education, we've talked about the biopsychosocial model. And really, you know, what we're trying to do is just bounce ideas and just trying to be as kind of open-minded while still being, you know, not so open-minded your brain falls out. Right. But still, you know, the idea for me of critical thinking is not disagreeing with things that you don't like. So some people think being a critical thinker is saying, oh, I don't agree with that, I'm going to disregard it. Well, actually, if there's information that comes out that goes against what you think and what you believe and what you feel, a good critical thinker should be able to say, you know, let me look at that. Let me understand why it's gone against what I think. What's the methodology like? How can I integrate that into what I think? Can I give a different perspective? Can I give a different view? Sometimes do I have to just take the smack in the face and change my perspective? And I think that's real critical thinking. You know, too many people think that critical thinking is just, you know, saying to other people, where's your references?
Yeah, it's fun though, isn't it? Being able to put those ideas, you know, on tape or over the air and out with everybody. And I always find it really fulfilling when someone takes a listen. Because right now you and I are talking and it's just you and I. We're kind of aware that hopefully someone listens to it in the end. But I
hope one person.
My mom definitely listens to all of my shows and she's not even in PT, but I know I got her. But when they close the loop and someone reaches out and they say, oh, wow, that made me think. To me, that's the best feeling. Whether they disagree or not, it made me think felt great.
So if I was to say, if there's one thing that people say to me consistently, you know, it would be that, you know, Ben, you've made me think. So I don't always know if that's agreeing with me or disagreeing right. with me. But a lot of people I've noticed do turn around to me and say, ah, Ben, you've made me actually think about that. So I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, but it seems to be a thing that people kind of, you know, I'm trying to do this with typical British reserve and not blow my own trumpet here. But that would be something that mostly I would say I get back from people is, you know, you've made me think and you've made me see things in a slightly different way. And for me, that's very fulfilling.
That's great. Clinical Thinker podcast can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever podcasts are heard. And that's with our friends Jared Hall and Mark Cardula. Last thing we do, Ben, on the show is the parting shot.
This is the parting shot.
The parting shot is brought to you by Rock Tape. More than just a tape company, Rock Tape is a movement company, tools and education for medical professionals. If you're looking to help your patients go stronger longer, check out rocktape.com. If you had one thing to leave with the audience, you know, maybe a soapbox idea or your mic drop moment, what would your parting shot be?
Well, yeah, it goes back, it kind of following the thread that we've talked about. It's always about, you know, challenging the ideas that we have today. You know, so for me, my favorite things to challenge at the moment would be our ideas around pain and our ideas around the biopsychosocial framework. Simply because I think we seem like we've got to a point where people talk about crossing chasms and, you know, and actually that they're on the other side and they kind of look back wistfully at these other people who haven't quite got there. And sometimes they'll throw missiles at them over social media and things. But actually, I think that you know, if we look at science and medical science and being a clinician, it's about continually crossing chasms and continually questioning the models and the ideas that we have. Because, you know, in 5 or 10 years' time, the sea will have shifted again.
Right.
You know, and unless we're open and willing to do that, I just see too many kind of people who feel like they're ahead of the pack and they've closed their mind now because they're ahead of the game. You know, we know this stuff. And actually, you know, it's really being ahead, not ahead of the game, but certainly on the top end of the curve and pushing your thought process is constantly being critical of everything, not just those things that you dislike. And it is uncomfortable being wrong, and it is cognitive dissonance. And no, it's not nice, and you don't always enjoy it, but hopefully the end result is a better one.
Love that. Find out more about Ben and follow him on Twitter at Core Kinetic, and that website core-kinetic.com. appreciate you taking some time out and talking with us about this, and I encourage people to follow, you know, on Twitter every once in a while when those thoughts come out, even if they are inciting on purpose. Isn't that good? And take a listen to that podcast as well with Jared and Mark. But thanks for the time, man.
Jimmy, I appreciate it. Thanks for your time too.
The PT Pinecast is a product of PT Pinecast LLC. It is hosted and produced by PT Pinecast CEO Jim McKay and CBO Sky Donovan from Marymount University. We talk PT, drink beer, and record it. This has been another pour from the PT Pinecast. The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. More on the show at ptpinecast.com.
Our home on the internet. PTPintcast.com. Created by Build PT. Build PT provides marketing services specifically for private practice PTs.
From website development and hosting,
providing content marketing solutions
for PT clinics across the country.
See what Build PT can do for you today
at buildpt.com.
Hi, I'm Alexa. You can now hear PT Pintcast using me. Just say, "Hey Alexa, launch PT Pintcast." Or you could be nice and try saying please for once.
What is being polite dead these days?
To hear episodes, just say, "Hey Alexa, launch PT Pintcast."
Maybe throw in a please at the end.